Culture Affidavit, episode 167, The Uncollecting Five, Hoarders. Hello and welcome to episode 167 of Pop Culture Affidavit, the podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Panneries. Well, it's January. I'm back for what's become an annual tradition here at the podcast, a look at my other blog, The Uncollecting. And in case you're unfamiliar with what uncollecting is, it's my effort to go through all of the things that I have accumulated over the years and watch and read them and decide what I want to keep or get rid of. That means working my way through my to-be-read and to-be-watched piles and hopefully getting a good amount of it out of the house. I've got a few different categories for this: comic books, trades and graphic novels, books, movies, TV seasons and shows, and podcasts. These can be in any format, digital, physical, because my watch and read list are spread across rooms in my house and various streaming platforms. Each time I watch or read something, I make a decision of whether or not I'm going to keep, sell, donate, or throw the item in the trash. Sometimes I review what I've watched or read, and that's what you'll find over at The Uncollecting. You'll also find essays and other pieces over there where I delve into things from my past as I find them. Letters, old journals, ephemera from high school and college, those sorts of things. And of course, I'm tracking everything or making an effort to track everything. If you heard me talk to Professor Allen last year, you heard him go on and on about spreadsheets and, well, you know that I just tally things on a list. Piece of paper I keep in my daily planner. I do have spreadsheets of my lists, and even those have been printed out for me to just cross stuff off because I like crossing things off of lists. Over the years, my progress on The Uncollecting has ebbed and flowed. In fact, some of my most recent blog entries have been about the idea of relapse, impulse control. It's taken a while for me to realize, or maybe just simply admit, that part of my having all of this stuff was tied to my tendency toward impulsive behavior, and that comes with ADHD, which is something I wasn't diagnosed until last June, although I'm pretty sure I've had it for most of my life. Now, said impulsive behavior hasn't led me down the path of dangerous actions or substance abuse, but, you know, I overspend, I overcollect, I overeat, and I definitely have a little too much. I hate to use the word journey, but that's pretty much what's going on here through this blog and this effort. And who knows if I'll ever fully be done with it. Well, we're all going to die at some point. Anyway, with each of these annual episodes, I'm going to look into something in popular culture that touches on the idea of collecting or uncollecting. This time around, I'm going with a reality show that's been on a cable mainstay for a decade and a half, and that is the A&E show Hoarders. I watched one couple story on both their original episode as well as a Where Are They Now episode from 13 years later, and that's what I'm going to talk about right after this.
Monthly, monthly, monthly. It's Action Film Face Off.
Hello, I'm Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, and I'd like to tell you about a podcast I do with my brother, Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist.
Action Film Face Off.
Yes, thank you, Jared. Action Film Face Off is a podcast where my brother and I, who are both military combat vets.
Jason was a Navy SEAL.
Jason was not a Navy SEAL. Jason was a military intelligence wing. But anyway, in each episode of Action Film Face Off, we select two different action films.
Some of them have Chuck Norris.
Technically speaking, none of them have had Chuck Norris yet, but it could happen because we use a randomizer set between 1970 and modern day to select our two films. So you'll always get two films, each from a different year.
Our randomizer has spikes on it!
We use a Google random number generator, so it does not have spikes on it. And we put the films into our Video Dome arena.
It also has spikes.
It does not have spikes. But we discuss the films and score them through 6 different rounds of criteria.
I score Bond films very high.
Okay, that's true. But anyway, by the end of the episode, we crown one of the action films the champion of Action Film Face-Off.
Next episode, Jason fights a bear.
Jason is not fighting a bear, but please give our show a listen. We're part of the Longbox Crusade network of shows.
Pat Sampson killed a man with a sword once.
I can neither confirm nor deny that statement, but you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and most podcatchers under Longbox Crusade, or you can subscribe to just our show by searching for Action Film Face-Off.
Come see the blood fly!
And that's Action Film Face-Off. We do, indeed, invite you to come and see the blood fly.
I just said that!
Do you ever have dreams of having, you know, one of those more staged, decorated, beautifully designed homes?
There'd be places I'd like to clear out a little more, but books and the design.
They actually made an effort, and they are committed to keeping certain spaces clear. But there's books everywhere, even in the kitchen. I want to see Vance's bedroom. Let me tell you about Vance's room. It's like a cave in there. I don't know that you can fit through here. There's this little tiny path to get to this bed that's surrounded by books.
I will point out that it is extremely comfortable and extremely cozy.
Vance, if you're lying there and something goes on, how are they going to get to you?
Easily. Usually paramedics
they do it all the time.
To do that.
They are so good at debating and winning arguments.
They take people down circular staircases.
I don't have a chance.
They go into rat-infested buildings.
These guys are professionals. They're the size of Chicago Bear football players. They're very, very thorough.
They sound so knowledgeable. I start believing everything they say.
Hoarders is a show that I have never watched before. I actually had little to no intention of covering it because having seen some of the ads for it, it all seemed exploitative to me. It premiered on the A&E network in 2009 at the height of the exploitation era of cable reality television. Another channel, TLC, was the leader of these sorts of shows. We're talking John K Plus 8, My 600-Pound Life, those series that starred the Duggar family, Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, Toddlers and Tiaras, and others like that. A&E had done reality shows of its own, most notably like Duck Dynasty, Storage Wars, and Live PD, but that doesn't have the track record that TLC does. And sure, where a lot of reality TV, such as the Kardashians and the Housewives and those types, is a circus, this was kind of the sideshow of that circus. And that's kind of why I've never really been that interested in it. The other thing that never had me interested in Hoarders was that I was pretty sure the show would wind up being gross. My very first episode about the uncollecting, I talked about an Oprah episode where they were cleaning out a hoarder's house. I also talked about watching Curiosity Inc., which is where Alex Archibald was cleaning out what was called the Potter's House. It was a hoarder's house. And yeah, there was health hazard stuff, food hoarding, mold, pests, those sorts of things. And you know, honestly, I wasn't in the mood to watch a reality television show that just had clothes on the cockroaches that were scurrying through the walls. So what changed my mind? What actually convinced me to cover an episode of Hoarders? I needed a topic. I'm not really kidding. I knew I was going to do the episode, and I thought it would be time to just suck it up and do Hoarders. Thankfully, Xfinity, for once, did me a solid. They've got just about every episode of the show available for streaming, so I carefully chose one that I was pretty sure was not going to gross me out. And this particular story is a couple in Chicago who hoarded books. And, well, one of my list is books, so it's like perfect, right? It actually was. I watched season 5, episode 10, which featured Claire and Vance, as well as the Where Are They Now follow-up, which was season 3 of episode 16. Now, I'll tell you that every episode of Hoarders features two stories over the course of its hour. The other story for the Claire Vance episode was in Florida and involved some serious drama around a woman who was living in absolute squalor. I fast-forwarded through those segments, especially when I saw the cockroach close-ups. It was an odd way to watch because the show cuts back and forth between the two stories. So while I spent 20 to 25 minutes on the episode, it was like watch a little fast forward, watch a little fast forward. It was like going through an old mixtape to try to find the right song that you wanted to listen to. I will say, though, I did pause on the other story to watch just what was basically an epic shouting match between family members, because those can be entertaining. So like I said, Claire and Vance are a couple living in Chicago who have been married for 42 years. It means they're around their 60s at the time this was originally filmed. They started collecting books when they first got married, and now their house is completely filled with them. Completely. Everything's stacked up in every room. Small paths are carved out for them to move. The kitchen is unusable, so they order takeout. They sleep in separate beds, both of which look more like hovels than bedrooms. Vance has a heart condition, and that's what prompted Claire to seek help, along with pleas from their friend Lynn. In one old picture of the couple, it looks like Claire is holding a baby, but there's no mention of a kid anywhere in the episode, so I'd imagine maybe they declined to participate or something. When we meet Claire, she says she's an aspiring writer, and she has, well, I don't know how polite the word kooky is these days, but she's got definitely a kooky personality. In fact, she seems really nice, and it's easy for you to get behind her as opposed to other people on the show who tend to be hostile. Vance, however, is a little less likable. He's not outright hostile, but he's a certified genius who teaches and has decided to gather knowledge through collecting books and reading them. And so many of these books, there's a lot of textbooks and a lot of big books about history and other topics. Vance is eccentric, and in a armchair psychologist might diagnose him as actually being on the spectrum or something. There's a fixation on everything. There's an attachment to the books. He makes a lot of strange and awkward jokes. He says weird things. At any rate, you can definitely tell right off the bat that he's going to be the complication in the story. So we have the hoarding, the heart condition, the concerned friend, and the fact that the city wants to come and inspect the house. The hoarding is something that Claire says has just gotten away from us, and it's reached a critical mass. The intervention begins with a doctor who specializes in OCD and hoarding. She obviously sees the physical issue when she goes into the house, but takes notice of when Claire says they have a physical and a financial problem, not a psychological problem. And that's always one of the more interesting aspects of a hoarding story, the way that the people being helped rationalize their issues. We'll see Vance do this throughout the entire episode. He's resistant to the entire process. At one point, he actually hides in his car. It made me wonder if Claire fixing his messes was pretty much what happened during their entire marriage. The people there, the psychologist, the professional organizer, all seem more focused on whether or not he'll try to help with the cleanup than actually looking at what is going on. Then again, the show's edited, right? So I don't know if they actually discuss these things. We're only seeing what they decide to show us. And to her credit, Claire is trying to help. But even in doing so, she's protecting Vance by only clearing out her own books and also making more and more excuses. Things come to a head, though, when a bookcase falls on two of the 1-800-GOT-JUNK guys who were cleaning things out. The bookcase had been unstable, and it was held up or stabilized by a slat of wood and a copy of The Secret History by Donna Tartt. So the organizer goes off on Claire. Basically, this is how truly dangerous this is. You're lucky it was us and not one of you. That sort of reprimand. They finally do get Vince out of his car at one point, and they convince him to talk to the psychologist. And she seriously talks to him. She doesn't berate him. She tries to get through to him. And he's doing that thing that like mean kids do when they like you're reprimanding them and they're only sitting there and listening to you because they just want to get on with it. And he's just like staring straight ahead. Or maybe that's my experience having been a teacher for 20 years. But there is some progress because he does click, something clicks in his head and he starts sorting. Eventually, they clear out 20,000 books. That only amounts to two rooms, and it's just a dent in the collection. But in just a couple of days, that's progress. The end of the episode shows Claire and Vance being led into their cleaned-out living room and kitchen, and Claire is excited. It ends on a positive note, and the screen reads, "After cleanup, Claire and Vance were extremely motivated and worked with an aftercare organizer. They gave away another 4,000 books, cleaned two more rooms, and worked on their front porch." I don't know how much time it was from filming to broadcast, but considering that two people who were older and had health problems were able to get 4,000 books out of the house, that's impressive. Now fast forward 13 years, and we have the Where Are They Now episode. Every episode of Hoarders begins with an explanation of what hoarding is and the approximate number of people in the United States who have some sort of hoarding disorder. In the season 5 episode, the number was 3 million. In this episode, it's 19 million. I don't know where they're getting those numbers, but I wouldn't be shocked to know that at least the increase is accurate. The way this episode is presented is alongside another Where Are They Now story, so it does fill the entire hour. But unlike the episode I watched from season 5, we're not cutting back and forth between those two stories. There's the Claire segment and the other guy's segment. So a little easier to watch. And actually, I ended up fast-forwarding through the first, five, six, 7 minutes of the episode because it was just recap of the entire previous episode that I just watched. Now, totally makes sense that they would play a lot of the segment, mainly because it was a 13-year-old episode, and who's gonna go look for that, or who's been watching for 16 years or whatever. You come across this on cable at random, you might not have any familiarity with this particular episode, so let's catch you up. So 13 years later, visiting the house, we see the organizer from the original episode. There's still a lot of books in the episode. There's still a lot of books in the house, but things are still safe. We learn that Vance had died from congenital heart failure a few years prior. Claire has had a fall and a broken arm at one point or another. And we see how old she has gotten. She has really aged. So for Claire, Vance's death was, according to her, a blessing and a curse. She misses him, but she does not miss his hoarding. And she's been working on what she can. Unfortunately, she was taken advantage of at one point. She had a friend come over and promise to help clear out more books, but he didn't do that and instead robbed her of appliances, her mother's china, and all of Claire's writing. The rest of the segment is a coaching session where they talk about health and financial stability and get Claire set up on eBay to sell books, some of which are actually rare and valuable. The moment she and the organizer part, she says that Vance, quote, "never realized my strength." And it does end on a sweet note. With Claire has made significant progress. She launched her online bookstore, successfully selling over 300 titles. She's now focused on cleaning the remaining rooms of the house. I'm glad I chose this episode, not just because it wasn't gross. Claire's a pistol, man. It's fun to watch her. It's fun to hear her talk. And she's likable. I was rooting for her from the beginning, as opposed to sometimes you just get so angry at some of the people in these situations. I could very much see how Vance had trapped her in a way, even though she shared his compulsion, she definitely enabled it. The way the show presents itself is definitely of that era and that style. There's shocking dramatic music, title cards that read like a true crime segment. I can see this working for the other half of the original episode, those shouting matches, the cockroaches, but it's funny how the dramatic presentation is incongruous and it's almost like comical. The editing really searched hard to make Vance a bad guy or make you mad at him. And in some cases I was, because he seemed like he was kind of doing this useless male, learned helplessness, weaponized incompetence sort of thing. But at the same time, it wasn't as severe as like dramatic music now, you know, that sort of thing. Or maybe I've just watched too many reality television shows in my day to see where they're searching for drama that's not really there. Now, did I personally see myself in Vance or Claire? Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. Although I do have at least one closet that is crazy full. There's a bunch of stuff in the basement. I look around. I have a child whose room takes days to clean out. What I can relate to, though, is the way they hold on to things and see a need for them, especially books. I think I've talked about this before. I know that at some point in one of these episodes, I contemplated getting rid of books, even throwing them away. Now, knowing that there's a library sale to donate to definitely helps, because by giving away my copy of a random novel, if it's intact and in decent condition, somebody else can enjoy it. But just like anything that's a piece of physical media, there's something attached to it, and deciding to get rid of some of those things takes a little bit of thought. It's just that Vance was completely paralyzed. Claire was as well. She had adopted that, oh, well, what are you going to do? It is what it is attitude that plagues so many of us. Kind of not defeat. It's just we've kind of accepted the status quo without consciously knowing we can change it or telling ourselves we can't because it's just really hard. And there's also the shame that comes with a lot of this, if you think about it, right? She's known for having all these books and she's being pretty brave by putting herself on television this way, but it's, you don't want to ask for help because you're ashamed of who you are and what you've done. There's a lot associated with this, especially the way we view other people and their issues, both mentally, physically, etc. Like I said, these shows are very much a sideshow in reality television. So it made her likable because of the fact that she's courageous enough to do this. And I hope that when you're watching a show like this, you are having some compassion instead of being like, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm not that person. And that maybe it does inspire you to do a little bit of your own like self-reflection and maybe cleaning as well. Now, the Hoarders Update episode aired 2 years ago in 2024. I tried to search for Claire on the internet to see if there was any update about her. In fact, I wanted to see if she was still alive. An internet search said, in late 2025, Claire shared that she and her family had purchased a new home. To prevent a reoccurrence of the extreme hoard, she established a two-out-one-in rule for new book purchases, meaning that she must part with two existing books for every new one acquired. Now, that search had assistance from Google's AI search, and I don't have anything to really verify that fact with. So if we take that at face value, she's doing well, or I hope she is doing well. Now, as for me, I'm going to continue to uncollect. I'm going to continue to keep track of it where I can. And if you want to follow that, go to theuncollecting.com. And that does it for coverage, but I do have a few pieces of feedback, mostly blog comments, and they date back to June of last year. The first one is from Michael Perrone. You heard him talk about his novels Danger Peak and Deja Vu last year, and he is writing a comment on my blog post looking at the song Scenes from an Italian Restaurant by Billy Joel. He says, nice deconstruction of a classic song. I always thought the narrator was someone who knew Eddie in high school, not Eddie himself. He refers to him in the third person. I'll also add Weekend Song from Streetlight Serenade, which is the same album as The Great Suburban Showdown for readers who might not know it, because I know Tom knows, as an on-the-nose suburban middle-class song from Joel's repertoire. Yeah, Weekend Song has the same feel as Springsteen's Out in the Street in that sense. And thank you, Mike, for writing in. Mike has a new short story collection out. It's called The Electric God and Other Stories. It's available wherever books are sold. I highly recommend checking that one out, and also his other novels if you have not read them. My friend Laura commented on my only 80s Joel episode of the podcast. She says, I had a cassette of Billy Joel's greatest hits that I played in my first car all the time. It was one of five cassettes that were played until they unspooled, or the tape got stuck in my car player during that just out of high school year. My favorite songs changed, came back, changed again. As I added other albums of his, they changed more. Back when I used to go to karaoke with an ex and some of our mutual friends, I found that Joel's songs, along with The Pretenders, were my favorite to sing and the best for my alto voice. I never got brave enough to try this song, though. Too many octave changes. Also, how did I know you played piano? She says, I write this comment while Vienna plays from my laptop speaker. Laura has outstanding taste in music, and I'm going to take, you know, and I'm so glad she wrote it. I'm going to take it as a compliment. From the user Green Demon, or GR33N Demon, who was commenting on my post about the movie Lucas from a while back, I was annoyed at the fact that they kept misidentifying cicadas as locusts. Granted, even a science geek must get that wrong in the 80s, I guess, one who didn't have access to a library. And finally, the last one here is a twofer. Now, it's because the recent comment is a response to a comment from 2018. So I want to read both. And they're responding to a blog post I wrote about Liberty Weekend. That was the 100th anniversary celebration of the Statue of Liberty back in 1986. My dad's friend had compiled all the footage and edited it onto a VHS cassette that actually is still sitting in my basement. I had sat down and watched it and kind of took notes and wrote a blog post about it. It's still up there on the site. It's called Liberty Enlightening the World, I believe is the name of the post. Anyway, so Wes T. Bowker, back in January 2018, says, "Hey there. Firstly, I realize this article is currently 7 years old, but I stumbled upon researching my family history. At one point, you mentioned the song Lady of Liberty as performed by Shelley Towns. What brought me to this article was that my late uncle, Charles Blaylock, wrote the song. If he was still alive today, I'm sure he'd get a kick out of knowing that one of his songs was heard by someone decades later. Thanks for sharing. It means a lot to me." And there is a reply from TX Tad, which I would imagine is Texas Tad, from December 17th of last year. "My dad provided at least some of the money to fund making that record. It wasn't his best investment. When none of them sold, we took a trip to New York City to try to peddle some of them on the street during the celebrations. Despite our efforts, including some heroic vendor antics by my uncle, we sold only a few. I recall depositing thousands of those records in the local landfill several years later. I still have a few of them and the master tape." I always love when the randomness of this leads people who were involved with the thing to find comments. It's happened more than one time. And I do have a couple of others that I think I might be able to track down and get in touch with. And that'll be for a future episode. In the meantime, go ahead and check out the blog. For the show notes, you can find me on Blue Sky, Instagram, Facebook, and all the other places. Next month, I'll be back with another episode. But until then, thank you very much for listening and take care. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is hosted and produced by me, Tom Panarese. The theme music is Pop Rock by Scott Holmes and is used under Creative Commons licensing. You can contact and follow me via email at popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com, on Facebook and Instagram as Pop Culture Affidavit, and on Blue Sky as Pop Aff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. And of course, you can find episode links, show notes, and blog posts on my website, popcultureaffidavit.com. Thanks very much for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.